Postscript. On June the 23rd, 2021, I was sitting in my kitchen scanning through news articles on my cell phone while intermittently flipping between my Twitter feed and responding to direct messages. Halfway down the feed was an article saying that the court in Spain had approved McAfee's extradition from Spain to the US to face tax fraud charges. I felt an instant knot forming in my stomach. I knew what this meant, or at least I thought I knew. An hour or two later, I saw another tweet by a news editor who was quoting Reuters and saying that John McAfee had been found dead in his jail cell in Spain. I fucking lost it. I walked upstairs to my office, the office from where I conducted every conversation with the man back in 2019 and 2020, and around which his laugh often reverberated. I sat at the top of the stairs, desperately trying to process this gut-wrenching and completely unexpected information. My visceral reaction took even me by surprise. I threw shit. I kicked out at the wall. I actually cried. And I'm a grown man of 51 years of age who barely cried at my own father's funeral. My wife, hearing the commotion, actually came and comforted me. She too, albeit vicariously, had lived through months in the world of John McAfee. The days that followed were a blur of sadness offset by doubt and confusion. On one hand, I was desperately sad that it appeared that prison had broken the McAfee spirit that had fought so hard to keep him alive. Faked heart attacks, faked strokes, flight from Belize, pursuit across America, and pursuit around the world. Throughout it all, McAfee's life force had been strong. At the age of 75, as he was at the time of his death, McAfee's desire to keep living, albeit under duress, seemed to be undiminished. Yet despite all of that, the man lay dead in a federal facility in Catalonia, having reportedly been found hanging in his cell with some kind of a note in his pocket that the Spanish authorities seemed quite willing to take as a suicide note. To me, it didn't read like an intelligent man like John McAfee's final farewell to the world. Inevitably, conspiracy theories exploded, literally within minutes of his death. Had he committed suicide? Had he been killed to ensure his silence about information he once claimed to have about US government figures? Was he dead at all? In the days after John's death, I was contacted for comment by a number of outlets that wanted my view, based on my relationship with him, on whether suicide was likely. As much as I wanted to get ahead of the story by cutting through some of the hype, at that time I was still reeling with shock and was unable to process what had happened well enough to articulate in the way that I wanted. All I could do was say that, based on the will to live that he had always expressed in our talks, it was a surprise to me that John McAfee would have taken his own life. Furthermore, when I heard that he'd given no indication to Janice that suicide was his frame of mind when they last spoke the previous morning, it all seemed even more implausible, given how close I knew those two were. However, I couldn't ignore the flip side to this argument, and that was the nature and tone of John's tweets in recent months. While he often suggested that he was relatively happy in prison, all things being equal, and that the relationships he had with younger inmates, many of whom considered him to be a father figure, were gratifying, there were other occasions where his tweets suggested that 8 months of incarceration, with no visits and little access to regular legal recourse, were starting to take their toll. When I considered all of this, I must admit that I did find myself thinking, maybe John just gave up. Even though it soon became clear that, although the judgment had gone against him regarding the concept of extradition, the practicality of his situation was that it would be a year plus until he'd be moved anywhere, in addition to there being multiple other legal plans already in place. Basically, this judgment wasn't unexpected. John knew it was coming. It was more a matter of when and what the options were thereafter. The suggestion that his death had been the result of foul play was no easier to assess in the days immediately afterwards, not in any way helped by the fact that McAfee had previously tweeted to say that if he was ever found dead like Jeffrey Epstein had been, it wouldn't be a suicide. In a separate tweet at a different time, he had also suggested that if anything was ever to happen to him, there would be an automatic release of the damning information he claimed to have. This theory of a dead man's switch, DMS, was certainly the most popular with the media in the short term. Indeed, every media outlet I spoke to wanted to know whether I thought that the existence of a DMS was even possible, and, given my insider knowledge gleaned during our conversations, whether I knew anything of this information he had referenced. The reality of the matter is that I was no more informed than anybody else. John had, of course, mentioned government corruption on a conceptual level in our talks many times, and as you'll now know, he did mention a rogue CIA agent who attempted to have him collected, whose name I know but omitted in the text, even though this was information that John himself had already made public at the time of his departure from the Bahamas, when the agent apparently tried to bribe a Bahamian police official. Other than that, that's all I knew. But knowing McAfee as I did, I also knew that nothing is ever for sure or clear. An hour or so after his death, a Q appeared on a blank background on his Instagram page, before later being removed. Now, I do know for sure that John rarely, if ever, accessed that account. To my understanding, the only social media that he actively engaged in was Twitter. To that end, the Instagram post was a mystery that became a lot more mysterious when hackers, tech types, established that the code behind the Q image was somehow connected to an Ethereum wallet with some kind of link to the whacked cryptocurrency coin that echoed the tattoo John had on his arm and the terminology he used to describe the actor being murdered in a couple of his tweets. At that point, honestly, I just let the wild conspiracy theories go. I didn't have either the information or the willingness to dig any deeper into it all in the days immediately after his death. I was still thinking too much about John McAfee's life to get too weighed down in examining some of the possibilities surrounding his death. That, depending on what transpires down the line, is something for another day. Regardless, people kept asking, and I kept saying, I don't know. I was more interested in the details about where John had been laying low, especially given that this location was where he'd been throughout our talks. As it turned out, the location, a place called Dorada Park Hotel, an hour south of Barcelona, wasn't especially glamorous. However, when I saw the images online of this previously Russian-owned beach hotel that had reputedly been closed in 2018 because the owner had mounted an industrial laser on the roof, I immediately recognized the coastal backdrop as the same view I'd seen behind him when we talked on our many Skype calls. Apparently the place was being run as a Bitcoin mining operation, perfectly legal in Spain, by the way, with a whole host of complex and extremely expensive computer technology installed in an underground garage from where the actual mining took place. It was suggested that the owner had installed the laser on the roof as a means of explaining the property's abnormal energy use, given how much electricity it requires to mine Bitcoin. On some levels, this location made sense. Maybe whoever was running the operation was the person John referenced in the bizarre forward he sent me early in the process. That seemed feasible, as did the existence of a Bitcoin operation generally. Cryptocurrency was, after all, John's world. What made much less sense was that he was in Spain at all and not being especially careful about what he posted on social media while he was. Indeed, it was amateur local sleuths who discovered his location from online images and the presence of unique Spanish products in them. To me, for someone who had been so careful and secretive, it made no sense that he was in a country like Spain, from where he could be reached and extradited, living in plain sight in a relatively touristy beachside area. Had he been in Serbia or Montenegro or somewhere similar, good luck finding anyone there, far less extraditing them, that would have made much more sense. But it was what it was. The Dorada Park Hotel was where it had all gone down, and in my few attempts to speak to anyone on the ground in Spain, all I could establish was that the place was now closed down and heavily guarded. Above and beyond all the mysteries surrounding his death, and in addition to the fact that I was in touch on a daily basis with his US lawyer, members of his immediate family and his close friends, and was being asked to talk about the man in some kind of official capacity to the media, I found myself torn in the aftermath of John McAfee's death. On one hand, I didn't want anyone to think that I was using John's death as an opportunity to simply sell a book. Indeed, as I've explained, the book was actually finished, apart from this part of it, long before John's demise. As far as I was concerned, the book was going to come out later in the year, John was going to endorse it and promote it as he said he would, and that would be it. Hopefully, his legal issues would have been resolved and he and I might have met in person someday, and had a laugh about it all. But when he died, everything changed. Suddenly, I was left with this man's life story as told to me, a life story that I knew beyond doubt that he wanted told no matter what. So I had no choice. I went out there in the media and talked, and as time passed and the rawness eased somewhat, I got better at saying what I wanted to say. The bottom line is that John McAfee had so much to say to the world, especially a world that's in as much turmoil as this one is right now. As far as I was concerned, when John died, the responsibility to let his words be heard became mine. The man treated me well. The least I could do was uphold his legacy in return by encouraging people, at a time when his name was on everyone's lips, to make themselves aware of this book we'd worked on together. That was my motivation in June 2021, and it will continue to be long after the book is published. Will there be other books about John McAfee? Probably. I, for one, would be interested to read them. But this one, particularly given the circumstances by which it was conceived and the style in which it is delivered, I hope will be considered fitting as the last will and testament it often felt like he was relating to me. You've been listening to No Domain by Mark Eglinton, narrated by Julian Elfer. Copyright 2021 by Mark Eglinton. Published by arrangement with Post Hill Press. Recording copyright 2022 by Ascent Audio, a division of Recorded Books. If you've enjoyed this audiobook, please visit rbmediaglobal.com/ascent-audio, where you'll find a wide selection of our unabridged titles. Thank you for being an Ascent Audio listener.